Big Fitness Podcast. It is Thursday, December the 27th, and the reason that I say that with emphasis is because normally this episode would drop on Wednesday. All episodes drop on Wednesdays. But with Wednesday being the day after Christmas, I just thought, okay, we'll hold this off for a day and give the maximum amount of people possibility to listen. And I was certainly busy, very, very busy all of Christmas Day. So just wouldn't have had a chance to get to it. So there's plenty of interviews that are sitting in the hopper, by the way, ready to be released. But I thought this week I would just do a solo show, talk over a couple of things that have been discussed on recent podcasts and things that I've been thinking about. But before we get started, I wanted to give a shout out. I have a new patron for the show. So as a reminder, Patreon is it's a creative home for content creators. It's a place where you can get basically be closer to the show. You can make essentially what is like a donation to the show. Thank you for putting out the effort and the work on this, as well as some other perks. So you can buy one-on-one sessions with me. You can purchase the ability essentially to have special Q&A shows, bonus content, things like that. But there's a new patron. And so to be able to participate in this, you go to Patreon. That's patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. So Helen is a new patron and she jumped on just a few days ago. So I want to give shout outs to Helen, Arnie, Barbara, and Kim are all patrons of the show. So thank you again so much for the support. I really, really appreciate all the love and certainly all the listenership. And I was just actually looking at some of the listenership and, you know, it's interesting. I requested from my provider that publishes the podcast a complete list of all the countries that listen to the show, because it caps basically at 20 different countries. And for a while there, I was keeping a running list on what countries were listening to it. And then after a while, I just stopped keeping the list. So I found out that it's actually 68 different countries that the podcast is listened to, which is awesome. And actually this month is a little interesting because only 58% of those are from the United States. So 42% are coming from places outside of the US. So shout out to everybody outside of North America that listens to this. The UK, Australia are definitely popular hubs for the show. So I even got a nice message from somebody in Slovakia the other day, which was cool. So thanks again for all the support, guys. Seriously. The other way that you can support the show is by going to, if you're listening on an Apple device, which 72% of you are, going to the podcast app or wherever it is that you listen to the podcast if you're on an Apple device, and just scrolling to write a review, tap write a review, spend 45, 60 seconds or whatever writing it, helps the show be able to get even more exposure to more people who need the help. So let's ultimately keep that engine rolling. So today, very Merry Christmas to anybody that celebrates Christmas, by the way, and very happy holidays to anybody who celebrates some kind of a holiday at this point in December. I think that one of the things that I have been thinking about a lot lately is just how triggering the holidays can be for people. Because for people that are in chronic pain, not only I feel like is your fuse maybe a little bit shorter than people who are not in some kind of a chronic elevated fight or flight, I think maybe a lot of the origins of the reason that you're in chronic pain have something to do with the people you're probably spending a lot of time with over this period of time. Could be close family, it could be relatives, it could be your parents, it could be, you know, a litany of other things. In fact, one of the things that I was thinking about, and I posted this on a forum a few days ago, but one of the things that I was thinking about, my wife and I, we went to the Seahawks-Chiefs game on Sunday night, this past Sunday night. We saw the Seahawks get a playoff berth, which was awesome. One of the things, though, was that I was we dropped our daughters off, and I remember this phrase that my mom said that it was almost like PTSD-esque, where it reminded me of so many instances throughout my life. Basically, my mom and her, she kind of had this kind of like you could tell there was frustration or irritation at the fact that we were there to begin with. And, you know, my dad, he wasn't being like that at all, you know, totally inviting, love seeing the kids, that kind of thing. My mom had this irritation about her that we could just, it was palpable. And so my oldest daughter, Zoe, you know, she's 4 and a half and innocent child, you know, so sweet, right? She walks up to my mom and she asked, "Where am I going to be sleeping, Grandma, when I'm here?" And my mom had said, "I'm too busy to talk about that right now." And, you know, I sort of I was like, what? I was thinking, like, what is she busy with? And I'm kind of watching her, and she's making a cup of coffee. Was that response? I'm too busy to talk to you. And I gave this a lot of thought over the next several hours, and it was something that was bugging me for quite a while. But I just started thinking, like, you know, ultimately, like, how much all of us want to be heard. And I remember so many times throughout my life where I remember, like, my mom's a school teacher. She would come home, and it would be, you know, 3 o'clock on the dot. She would show up at home every day. And I would have something to say to her, you know, like, well, I want to talk about this, or here's what happened at school, or here's what I'm having trouble with, or here's what I'm upset about, or like really whatever it was. And she would always say, I need to go and get my time. I need to go and take a break. And she would go to the backyard and do God knows what, you know, smoke cigarettes, smoke weed, whatever the case is. I don't know what. So, you know, and then it would be 15 or 20 minutes, and then eventually she'd come back in and it would be okay and we could talk about whatever. But that phrase, I'm too busy to talk about that right now, was just like, it was just, God, I've probably heard that, not an exaggeration, 200 or 300 times in my life. And, you know, again, like I've always talked about, I had a tremendous childhood. And this is where I want to segue into one of the main topics of today is around trauma. And there's going to be a couple of episodes that are coming up soon. One is from an internal medicine doctor. Another one is from a couple of psychologists. But one of the things that I've been thinking about is trauma, and it, totally in each to their own. I think that, and this is even, there's been an evolution in psychotherapy over the last number of years where the definition of trauma and how it's treated has even subtly changed. And I think that for a long time, when people think of trauma, and I know that I was very, this is the way that I felt for so long up until a few months ago, is that trauma had to be a major, like a major type T type of thing. Meaning as a kid, I had to be sexually abused, or I had to be beaten, or I had to witness a killing or a stabbing or something like that. You know, go through extreme poverty, things like that. The stuff that we typically would see like in the adverse childhood experiences study. And I've come to find out that this is not actually the case at all. Because trauma could be a lot of little things compounded over an amount of time. But I think more than anything, the main thing to remember is that trauma is completely up to the individual, how it is that you interpret the events that are happening around you. Let me give you a good example. This is right around the time a couple of years ago where I was really struggling to succeed at work and make, I've talked about it so much on this, my fifth President's Club as a sales team member. And for years, like, it's not that the job came easy to me, but I just found myself having a lot of success pretty early on. And then suddenly you hit that stream of success slows down. Ultimately, I did make that President's Club maybe on the very last day of the year. But I had a Facebook memory remind me today that on this day 2 years ago, I had come down with my second quote-unquote flu in 3 weeks. My temperature was 102.6. I had $2,500 or $2,600 left to sell to get to President's Club, and I was just like, I was in dire straits. Like, I was in really, really rough shape. And eventually I did make it. However, I remember that experience of having to go through that, of all these customers, you know, pushing me off and saying they weren't going to buy and not having that kind of success. That was traumatic as hell to me when I go back and think about it. And it's so absurd for a lot of people maybe to try and wrap their head around that. Like, how could that be traumatic? Somebody not buying from you. Like, so what? Life goes on. It's business. But to me, that was traumatic. And so as I'm self-analyzing myself, and I talk about the example earlier of, like, I go to talk to a parent, and my parent says that they are too busy to talk to me right now, or they don't want to talk right now. Really just not listening, not hearing me, not understanding where it is that I'm coming from. Call it whatever it is that you will. Customers, just me spending a ton of time with them and them not being receptive to it, or maybe being receptive to it and then suddenly falling off the face of the earth, the black hole. And if you're in sales, you know what that is when a customer just totally ghosts you. That was a traumatic experience, and having it happen over and over and over again that year became increasingly traumatic, and it was something where I was sort of always in this fight or flight, hence why everything was so out of whack. I had the shoulder surgery. I had the knee problems. I had the sciatica. I had the thoracic outlet syndrome. I had the nerve problems. I had the numbness in my fingers. I had my deltoids were on fire all the time. I was having back spasms, having neck spasms, lots of illnesses, lots of stomach problems, gastrointestinal issues, like, you know, you name it, and it was happening to me. And it's because of my interpretation of all these things that they are traumatic. So I think that a lot of people that listen to this and a lot of people that don't listen to this, and maybe at some point, maybe you're catching up, maybe you'll catch up on this episode a year from now and you'll listen. I want to be very, very forward with you in the fact that trauma is completely each to their own. And so just because I think a lot of, there's a woman who, and I won't mention her name, but she may listen to this and she may know that it's about her, but her and I are connected on social media and she's in these TMS groups and she keeps saying that she tries to journal but just can't find anything bad. I observe her life and I see her her admiration and her love for her children and all this kind of stuff. And me postulating, sitting back, I can almost think, okay, maybe here's a thought. I see, like, one of her daughters, for instance, has a lot of success. Cheerleader, seems to be, I mean, just from my take, my vantage point, perhaps the very, very popular girl in school and probably, you know, adored and loved by all these different people. Maybe there is a part of the subconscious there in this woman, the mother, who sees, okay, when I was a kid, I didn't get that kind of love and attention from everybody that was around me. I wasn't as successful, quote unquote, as my daughter is. And so maybe it's subconsciously bringing up a lot of these things from when she was a kid or when she was in high school or whatever the case is. That's something that armchair quarterback, I can sit back and say. So trauma is, it's completely up to you whether something is to be traumatic or not. And the job of you is not necessarily to judge whether that is worthy or not of being called traumatic. If it makes you upset, then it makes you upset, and that's just the way it is. So trauma can be, it can be your dog passing away, but trauma can also be you're having a fight with your boss, or you're having an argument with your boss and your boss isn't listening to you because maybe that's drumming up some old shit underneath the surface that you know was happening years ago that you can't even, you're having a tough time even thinking about at this point. And so here's the best advice that I would give to you. And this came from my main man, Brad Gutting, who I did the podcast with last week, that I think is, as I've given it more thought and actually put it into practice now each day, I feel like it can make a massive impact for people that have not listened to that whole show with Brad and I, which if you have not, go back and listen to it. It would be the December 19th episode of this podcast. I think it was episode number 49 or something like that. But basically, he was talking about what was his way out of pain, because he got out of pain and then a couple years later completely relapsed. And so initially, one of the ways that he got himself completely out of pain, and my opinion is that if he would have continued doing this practice, there's good potential that, and maybe not every day, maybe once a week or something like that, if he would have continued doing this practice, then perhaps he wouldn't have relapsed. But he had talked about making lists, just making lists. So like a lot of us will go and we see a therapist over this stuff. We read a ton of books over this stuff. We participate in online forums, a lot of this stuff. We're afraid because we don't know what the future holds as far as our pain, even though you should. Like I know what the future holds for my pain. I know that I am not going to have a chronic condition that is unsolvable anymore unless I get a tumor or something like that, but which I laugh about it. That's not funny. But could obviously happen. Anything can happen. But as far as things like, you know, the gastro problems and the back and the neck and the shoulder and the elbow and the knees and all that kind of stuff, I just know it's not going to stick around forever. And so Brad was talking about listing, and I, you know, journaling, I think, is what a lot of people try to do. Nicole Sachs is the genius on this stuff. Sarno talked about writing essays, but it's the same idea. But one of the things that Sarno had recommended doing in The Divided Mind before doing the journaling was making a list of everything that you find upsetting. And think about it like this. You go, you're trying to get, and this is very similar to the conversation I had with Adam Heller a couple months ago. Everybody's just trying to get through the day, right? So you have a boss who ticks you off. You have the person who cut you off on the freeway. You have your kid acting like a maniac. You have, you're getting constant spam emails. Like all these things that you, again, throw into that reservoir of rage over and over and over again that you're repressing. Because simply by just letting it pass by, that's repressing. You're not being mindful. They're just continuing to pass by. And so what if you gave it every single night, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever the amount of time that you feel like you need is, and just make a list of everything that that has angered you, whether you see it big or small, that entire day. And I think that what you'll find is that it will spread and it will go back years and years. You may start with something today. For instance, if I were to write one out, what's something that happened today? Okay, good example. as I record this, it's December 26th. I wrote a whole bunch of emails to customers this morning. I got out of office replies on all but one of them. And so I'm thinking, gosh, it's the end of the year. I really need to finish off these sales and make my number here, right? So that will be something that goes on my list later today, is this thought of like me spending all this time and effort and energy writing these emails, and literally it's out of office every single time. People aren't listening, right? So I can relate that back to several things in life. So again, my recommendation for you and for every night, just try it for a couple of weeks. If you've done the journaling thing and you've done it for weeks or months or whatever on end, and it's not getting anywhere with you, maybe give this a shot. Making a list, or literally set a timer for 10 or 12 minutes, turn the timer over if it's on a cell phone or whatever. Actually, I use a really nifty Chrome extension. I can't remember the name, but basically it's a timer and it'll count down in the upper right hand corner of the screen. And then I just open up notes on my Mac and I just start writing a list. At most, an item might be a sentence long. This isn't designed to be retelling stories. I think maybe that's part of the problem and the place where a lot of people get stuck when it comes to journaling, is that they're sort of retelling the story over and over again. And I think that you spend, you know, the real benefit of the journaling is the excavating of the instance, excavating of the anger. But if there's so much time trying to think logically about it, because the subconscious is illogical, can't apply logic to an illogical situation, you're trying to apply logic and tell a story to something that is not going to be logical to you or logical with you. And so you need to really be able to apply that same kind of principle. So making a list, and it's appropriate because it's Christmas time, making a list, checking it twice, but a new list every single day. And I've recently, you know, a lot of the times it would start out, like in the last few days when I've been doing this, it started out with, you know, angry about my kid or angry about my wife or something like that. And I remember yesterday I got all the way, somehow I started with some family members, and then by the end of it, I'm looking back over the list when it's done, and you can choose to delete this or whatever it is. I'm looking at the list when it's done, and in there is me giving reasons of like, I'm not as satisfied with the way my body looks now as it was 3 years ago. I'm not as satisfied with how in shape I am or how in shape I feel or how fat I feel like I'm getting, those kinds of things. And you know, that's tough. And for those of those that don't know my story, there was a period of time to which I was very overweight. I was made fun of an awful lot as a kid and as a teenager for my weight. And then when I was 16 or 17, I just made a commitment to myself that I am going to shed a whole ton of weight. And I lost close to 100 pounds with diet and exercise and crash dieting, basically. Weight Watchers, you know, 12 or 1300 calories a day, probably. Which I would not recommend to anybody. I was 17, and so you're any harm that you do to yourself is going to be pretty well healed pretty fast because of how young I was. But those kinds of memories were things that were coming up, and it made me think a ton about my interview I did with Adam Heller, who wrote Zero Pain Now a couple of months ago. I see a lot of criticism about Adam that I think are largely unfair. People say that he seems like too much of a pitchman and he's too into sales and he charges too much for services. Look, guys, like, things are worth whatever it is that you pay for them. So if somebody charges you $15,000 to cure yourself of chronic pain, like, that's what the price is because people have paid that. It's no different than the real estate market. And, you know, this could blast into a whole nother topic and a whole nother episode. But when we think about doctors, and doctors are only in it for the money, I would estimate maybe 1%, less than 1% of doctors ever got into medicine because of the money. I don't think that that's why. I don't think that you go to school and put yourself in a couple hundred to a few hundred thousand dollars in debt because of the payoff that you may get in 10 or 15 or 20 years of practicing. I just don't think it's practical to think that way. So Adam talks about in his book, making a list of anything that could be angering you, because at some point, like, you're chipping away at that reservoir of rage. So you're going to be doing positive work for yourself just simply by writing those things down and making them on a list. You can choose if you want to journal about them later on or not. But I think if you've been stuck in the journaling hamster wheel for a long time, journaling may not be the thing that works for you. Like, if you have not seen a single dent and no movement in several weeks, like, try something else. Try the listing thing, and give that a shot. Because again, like, a lot of traumas we've read about. I think her name is Helen in one of Sarno's books. She talked about being sexually abused, and then all of her pain went away magically. That's not going to happen for 99.9% of people. And so likely it's a lot of tiny little traumas that have added up over time. Again, could be the customer that didn't sign your contract for you, like with me, right? putting those things in a list and getting them out on paper, there is something cathartic about putting it on paper and either deleting it or burning it or whatever the case is. But it's also very therapeutic. And there have been a lot of studies around, and Dr. Hanscom talked about this with me back in July, but there's something very therapeutic about expressive writing and about writing in general. And just that simple act of putting something down on paper and actually diminishing the neurons in your brain that are firing and connecting pain to trauma, pain to trauma. Now it's saying trauma to paper. So where's pain going to go? Can't go anywhere. So give this a shot. Just give it a try. I want to close on this. I've got a couple of messages, and I promise I will get back to you if you're a listener of the podcast. There's a few messages sitting in the inbox right now of people that want to apply for coaching with me. Continue to send the messages coming, guys. The holidays are just, you know, it's just very, very been tied up with work and the kids and all this. And I'm not going to tell you that I'm too busy to attend to you, because I think that's an asshole thing to say. But I will get back to you within the next, let's just call it, to put it on myself, 24 hours from the time that you hear this. I will certainly get back to all of you. So with that being said, thank you so much for listening. And I'm not sure what's in store next week. I don't think on the day after New Year's I want to air one of my precious interviews that's sitting in the can, but they'll for sure be kicked off the next week. And by the time that you hear this, my beloved Washington Huskies, University of Washington Huskies, will play the Ohio State Buckeyes in their first Rose Bowl, I think in 17 or 18 years. So let me close with, go Dawgs.